Okay, my name is Jeff White. At the time of the strike, I was Deputy Mechanical Engineer in Six Bells Colliery. As a member of the British Association of Colliery Management, I wasn't actually on strike. We were mandated by our employers not to go on strike. Well, my perspective on the strike really was that the NUM was suckered into it by the government. I think they were totally prepared. Oh, they probably didn't anticipate it going on so long. They were totally prepared manpower-wise, and they'd flooded the country with stocked coal and were waiting for something like this to happen. All the NUM did was follow their leaders. And I think that Mr. Scargill, who I've met on several occasions, was a little bit politically naive at the time and walked straight into the trap that Mrs. Thatcher set for him. Of course, during the time they were on strike, and bear in mind, I had two brothers who were on strike. Fortunately, it hasn't split our family, as it does with a lot. But I was very sympathetic with the fact that they weren't allowed to work. I've seen quite a few families, and if you read the newspapers, you'll find this even more prevalent in places like Yorkshire. But down here, I know several families with brothers and fathers and sisters have not spoken for the 25 years since the strike. The people in the NUM at Six Bells expected us to work. They were told on day one in a meeting with the manager that we were told we had to work. They accepted it because they wanted pits to come back to. And as long as we didn't overdo it and try and do their work, we maintained our presence to safety cover, they were quite happy with us. I probably think that the government at the time achieved everything that they wanted to out of the strike. I don't know that they were that concerned about individual details, but I think they wanted to take on one of the strongest unions in the country and demonstrate, as they did with the steel industry before it, that the NUM and unions in general could no longer hold the country to ransom. I think in this they succeeded. She brought Ian McGregor in from America, set him on the steel workers union, and then set him on the miners. He was here for a purpose, he succeeded and was probably adequately rewarded for it. In all probability, if there hadn't been a strike, some of the colliers that closed because of the strike and could have probably have gone on for a few more years. Ultimately, I think we are where we were always going to be. There were very few colliers left because after the strike they developed an even better and simpler plan for closing colliers. They didn't care if a colliery made a profit or a loss. If it made a profit, it would stay open. If it made a loss, they would close it, and it was down to the men to do it. If they wanted to get rid of a particularly annoying colliery, if that's the right word, they would overload it with men from other collieries who didn't want to go there. The fact there were too many men there made it even more unprofitable, so the end result was that another colliery closed and even more people were made redundant. I happened to walk out from Six Bells once behind Terry Wheatley and Brian Wright. They didn't know I was there, and they'd come with the obvious intention of closing Six Bells and Marine. And the conversation went along the lines, "We haven't got no worries here, Brian. These men will close this in pretty short order." And they just left it until it was no longer profitable. Then they offered the big redundancies and pensions, and the men voted to shut it. With the closure of the collieries, obviously the reduction of income into the families, some families had three or four people working in the coal mine. It was four from my family working at Big Pit. Although that was pre-strike, that must have happened in many collieries. The families were splintered then because people had to find work where they could. And the income into the areas was obviously less. People spent less. The fact that many people liked working in collieries and didn't like working in factories meant that times weren't quite so happy. They were now going to work not as part of a community, they're going to work simply to earn a living and to provide for their families. Of course, eventually, after 6 to 9 months of the strike, people started coming back to work. They came back for various reasons, I guess predominantly because they needed to provide food for their families. These people were actually preyed on by senior members of British Coal, taken out and met in pubs, wined and dined, for example, and encouraged to come back to work. Whether these people were weak-willed or that they thought their priorities were their families before their union, who's to say? All I know is that in 6 bells, over 200 people came back to work. So therefore, it was impossible for the local NUM lodges to pick on these 200 odd people. Whereas in Blansacker and an adjoining colliery, who went to work down 6 bells shaft, 4 came back, and those 4 were eventually hounded mercilessly out of the industry. So I guess it just says really that if you can bully people, you will. If you can't, you won't. My opinion on people that come back is that they, and broke the strike, is that they probably couldn't help it. They were preyed on by these people and encouraged and bribed to come back to work, if you like. They made their decisions based on the fact that they needed to provide money for their families. I ain't got a problem with that. Never had a problem with the people that had the opposite view and would support the union, whatever. It's the people in between I got the problem with, the people that went out there and encouraged them to come back to work. They should have been left to their own decisions. At the onset of the strike, and for a little while in the early days, it was generally accepted that the pickets that we had to pass through to go to work were the local pickets, the people who were concerned with the colliery and, of course, wanted to be sure their colliery would be there when they came back. So basically, we drove up to the picket lines. One of the union leaders would be there. They'd recognise us and they would tell the people to let us go through, and there wasn't a problem. But I drove up there one Monday morning and the difference was obvious. It must have been that someone a little higher in the NUM had decided it was too easy for us, and there were people that I didn't recognise on the gate. I learned after they were from Pentrekyber and places that are known for their militancy. So I drove up as I normally did, suffered a horrendous amount of abuse as I was going. The car was rocked from side to side and jumped on. And in the end, police marched forward in a phalanx, if that's the right word, pushed these people back, and I drove in. Don't think I've ever been so scared in my life. I was literally shaking. A little while later, the sergeant came up to see how I was, and a few minutes later then, he came up to see how I was. Of course, he was still upset, probably is the right word, and calming down. And I realised that I didn't know him. He wasn't the same one. And there were no numbers on the uniforms. Whenever the NUM had decided to change the pickets, somebody had obviously heard about it, and we had a group of specially trained policemen who I found out from this sergeant later on had been training for over a year in order to deal with militancy on picket lines. In my opinion, the government was totally prepared for the strike. I don't know if they knew it was coming then or whether it was going to come soon. But it appears from information I'd had from several of the policemen I spoke to during the strike that they'd been training people for dealing with mobs for some time. Pretty common knowledge that the country was awash with stockpiles of coal. So my opinion is that probably Margaret Thatcher was quite happy for the strike to happen, probably didn't want it to last for as long as it did, but didn't care anyway. And in the end, she achieved what she wanted. I met Arthur Scargill once and was introduced to him in 6 Bells Colliery. I shook his hand and said, "Hello, Mr. Scargill." So, "No, Mr. Scargill," he said, "call me Arthur." And he was an exceedingly charming personality. The opinion I formed over him over the strike was that he was just misled and politically naive. The other one, Mrs. Thatcher, I've never met her. You know, I'm only a long way down the pecking order to meet people like that. So all I know is what I read in the papers, but I read a good article the other day that said she was determined to destroy the unions in order to make a millionaire friends, billionaire friends. And if you look at what has happened during the strike, since the strike, and now in the current economic climate, maybe the fellow that wrote this was right. Minded people, scabs, half of them were working. They weren't living on the dole and handouts and all the rest of it, even though they probably took them. My brother started a decorating business and he's still doing it today. My other brother worked as a labourer on building sites, so they were earning a living. But they weren't earning a living from mining coal. So they felt that they were justified in doing what they did. Well, I don't know.